Welcome to the CyberQ podcast. This episode is part of our Cyber Insight series where we deep dive into one of our reports. And today we have an AI-generated discussion of our H1 2025 Global Threat Briefing, which focuses on how the cyber threat landscape could impact the insurance market. But before we jump into it, William Altman, CyberCube's Head of Cyber Threat Intelligence Services, is here to tell us more about the report. William, what does the report cover and why does CyberCube create it?
This report comes from CyberCube's Concierge Threat Intelligence Service. We serve brokers, insurers, and reinsurers with timely cyber threat intelligence because we believe that everyone in the cyber insurance ecosystem should have the opportunity to anticipate rising threats, adapt accordingly, and avoid losses. Now, this year, we focused on small businesses. We've focused on medium and large businesses in the past. Our focus on small business here is certainly not meant to downplay the impact of cyber attacks on medium and large businesses, but rather to say that, look, there's a lot of small businesses out there. They tend to be overlooked and underappreciated in terms of their contribution to the global economy. Yet they are facing cyber attacks today with less cyber insurance coverage than is needed to adequately protect themselves in the face of the threats that are in front of them. And so what we see here is a protection gap, and that's what we'll be talking about today.
You know, when we talk cyber attacks, the big headlines, they always seem to focus on the huge corporations.
The major breaches.
Exactly. But there's this massive group of small businesses out there really driving economies, both developed and emerging.
Absolutely. The real engine room.
And what's kind of wild is how underserved they often are by the cyber insurance market, even though they're, well, prime targets.
It's a significant gap and, frankly, a huge opportunity and responsibility for cyber insurance pros.
Right. That's what we want to get into today. This deep dive is really about understanding the threats they face using insights from recent threat reporting.
Exactly. We want to equip you, the listener, the insurance professional, with the knowledge to better understand this market.
Because it helps you serve them better.
Right. Precisely. Better conversations, better solutions.
So our mission here isn't just data dumping. It's pulling out the key trends, the insights relevant for insuring small businesses, making that value proposition crystal clear.
Making it real for them.
Okay, so where do we start? What are the really pressing threats right now?
Well, one threat that consistently hits this segment hard is financially motivated ransomware.
Right, ransomware. We hear about it all the time.
But what's striking for small businesses, and we're talking companies with maybe 11 to 1,000 employees here, is that in incident response cases, something like 75% of ransomware victims fall into that category.
Wow, 75%? That's huge. Why them specifically?
It often boils down to defenses. They typically don't have the same level of sophisticated cybersecurity as, say, a Fortune 500 company.
Makes sense. Fewer resources, maybe no dedicated security team.
Exactly. And that vulnerability makes them attractive for attackers looking to hit multiple targets at once. Sort of a volume game.
So large-scale simultaneous breaches across less defended targets.
Precisely. These increase the odds of a payout for the attackers.
And thinking ahead, there's talk about AI potentially making this worse.
Yes, that's a key area to watch. Fascinating, but also quite concerning. We might not see fully AI-driven attacks tomorrow, but...
but it could help attackers scale up.
Absolutely. Think about automating reconnaissance, scanning the internet for vulnerable systems way faster than humans ever could.
Yeah.
Or speeding up authentication bypass, deploying malware more efficiently, even executing the ransomware itself.
Okay. So AI lowers the barrier to entry, makes attacks cheaper, faster, maybe leading to more attacks, even if the ransom demands per attack are smaller.
That's the potential scenario. Smaller ransoms, but lots of them adding up significantly.
Which, for you listening, means risk models need to adapt, right? Factoring in that speed and scale.
Definitely. Monitoring how AI helps attackers scan the internet at scale in 2025, that's going to be crucial. It just broadens the exposure for these smaller firms.
Okay, so ransomware is a major evolving threat. Got it. Now, the analysis also points to specific sectors. Let's talk small financials flagged as an opportunity zone.
Right. Small financials think firms with annual revenues between, say, $10 million and $250 million. They're a huge part of the economy.
A big potential market for brokers and insurers, then.
A very big market. The sector overall is rated moderate risk, so their security level can partially offset their high exposure to financial loss and, you know, regulatory heat.
Moderate risk, but I imagine there's variation within that.
Huge variation. That's the key insight. Globally, maybe 65% have pretty decent security above average or high, but that leaves 35% with below average or even low security.
So for underwriters, there's a real need to differentiate, to identify those high security firms.
Exactly. It allows for tailored policies, better pricing, and it means there's a good chunk of potentially underinsured clients who actually have strong security.
What does that strong security look like in practice for these smaller financial firms? What should underwriters be looking for?
You're looking for adherence to regulations, mainly. Things like FCAR data, right? SOC2 for data handling, security privacy, and ISO 27001 for information security management. Regular audits, good fraud detection, clear reporting protocols.
Yeah.
Right. And the lower security ones likely lack those formal processes, maybe older tech?
Often, yes. They might rely on more basic, sometimes outdated security measures.
So for you as a broker, understanding this isn't just box ticking. It's about really grasping the client's risks.
And educating them, potentially. Helping them see the value in strengthening their posture.
But there's a catch, even for the secure ones, isn't there? This aggregation risk?
Yes, cyber aggregation. That's a critical point. Even firms with solid internal security are often vulnerable because they rely on the same technology providers.
Especially for things like fund administration.
Exactly. Many outsource to major platforms. Think SS&C Globop or HedgeServe. If one of those gets hit,
it could impact dozens, maybe hundreds, of their client firms simultaneously.
Precisely. It's a systemic risk. The analysis models this kind of scenario. A large-scale data theft hitting a major fund administrator shows the potential ripple effect.
And we saw real-world examples of this kind of disruption in 2024.
We did. Attacks on firms like Tosan in Iran, Sayedge Technologies in India, that one hit about 300 smaller banks, a huge disruption. And even in the US, Equal End, Evolve Bank, and Trust, they really highlight the supply chain vulnerabilities and how widespread the impact can be.
Okay, so financials. Big opportunity, but needs a nuanced view of security and a sharp eye on that aggregation risk. Let's switch gears to education. That's flagged as high risk.
Very high risk, yes. Needs greater scrutiny.
Right.
It often comes down to tight budgets for cybersecurity, combined with the incredibly sensitive data they hold, student records, employee information, health data sometimes.
And the stats reflect that underinvestment.
They do. Around 56% of small education organizations globally are in those lower security maturity buckets. It suggests their defenses often haven't kept pace with the risks.
That's hurrying. Where are the main tech weak spots?
Student information systems and learning management systems are key vulnerabilities, like PowerSchool, Moodle, Blackboard.
The systems that manage everything, student data, grades, learning materials, course systems.
Absolutely core and highly attractive targets.
And there are other common technologies too.
Oh, yes. Communication platforms for parents. College readiness tools like Naviance, single sign-on systems like Clever or ClassLink, they're all interconnected.
Creating more potential entry points for attackers.
Unfortunately, yes.
There was a big breach mention involving PowerSchool in early 2025.
There was a major incident. PowerSchool is used by thousands of schools, maybe 18,000.
Huge user base.
Affecting potentially over 60 million students globally.
Oh.
The fallout could be massive regulatory scrutiny under GDPR, lawsuits.
A real wake-up call, likely driving demand for data breach coverage in that sector, I imagine?
Very likely. It really underscores the risks.
So like with financials, is there a difference between higher and lower security scores?
There is. The more secure ones tend to do regular, thorough vendor risk assessments. They check the security of their tech providers.
Due diligence on the supply chain.
Exactly. Contracts with clear security obligations, active monitoring. The lower security ones may be using outdated software. No real vetting process for vendors, less visibility into third-party risks.
Okay. These sector deep dives are really useful. And just to hammer home the point, the analysis listed a whole range of attacks across different sectors and countries just in the last year or so.
Yeah, that snapshot is powerful. Financials in the US, Singapore, Israel, education in Australia, Canada, public sector in Argentina, South Africa, Brazil, IT in Switzerland, nonprofits, healthcare in the US, banking in India, transportation in Germany.
It really drives home that this is global, it's diverse, it's not an abstract threat. It's happening everywhere to all sorts of small organizations.
And for you, the insurance professional, having those real-world examples is invaluable when talking to clients about why they need this coverage.
Absolutely. It makes the risk tangible. Okay, so bring this all together. We see the scale of the threat, the specific sector risks, the potential impact of AI. What's the call to action here? How do we close this protection gap for small businesses?
It really has to be a concerted effort. Brokers, underwriters, reinsurers, everyone in the ecosystem has a role.
Okay, let's break that down. What should brokers be focusing on?
Education is huge. Proactively reaching out, explaining the risks in plain language, showing how insurance helps mitigate them.
Moving beyond just quoting a price.
Definitely. Offering value adds like pre-coverage risk assessments can also help businesses understand where they stand and maybe incentivizing generalist brokers to really push cyber policies to their small business clients, expanding that access.
Makes sense. And for underwriters?
Developing scalable practices and models specifically for small businesses, not just shrinking down enterprise approaches.
Recognizing their unique challenges and resources.
Right. And encouraging good cybersecurity hygiene, maybe through incentives, better terms for those who invest in security. Also working with brokers to refine policy language, make sure the included services really meet small business needs.
Collaboration is key there. And finally, the reinsurers. What's their crucial role?
Stability and capacity. Reinsurers need to maintain a stable market by having clear underwriting strategies for these small business-focused portfolios.
Differentiating small business cyber risk from large enterprise risk?
Exactly. Ensuring there's enough capacity to cover this segment effectively and sustainably, it supports the whole market.
So it truly is a team effort across the entire insurance chain.
Absolutely. Education, tailored underwriting, stable reinsurance. That's how the industry builds resilience for this vital part of the economy.
Okay, so to quickly recap for everyone listening, key takeaways from our deep dive today. Financially motivated ransomware, still a massive evolving threat, especially for small businesses. Remember that 75% figure? Specific sectors like small financials offer big market opportunities. But you need to understand that security variation and watch out for aggregation risk from shared tech.
Crucial point.
Small education, high risk, often under-resourced, dealing with super sensitive data, vulnerabilities in core systems like SIS and LMS are key concerns.
Definitely keep an eye on that sector.
And the potential for AI to scale attacks faster and wider, that's something we absolutely have to monitor. And fundamentally, closing that protection gap, it needs everyone involved. Brokers educating and expanding access, underwriters tailoring solutions, reinsurers providing stability.
That's a great synthesis. Knowing these nuances really empowers you as a professional to have better conversations, offer the right protection, and ultimately be a trusted advisor to these businesses.
Well said. And maybe one final thought for you to take away and mull over. Given how sophisticated and widespread these threats against small businesses are becoming and how critical these businesses are, how can you, in your role, proactively innovate? How can we as an industry genuinely build more cyber resilience within this vital economic engine? Something to think about as you navigate this space.
Thank you for listening to the CyberCube podcast, where we break down cyber risk, insurance, and everything in between. If you enjoyed today's conversation, make sure to subscribe on your preferred listening platform and tune in for the next episode. You can read the full report on our website, www.cybercube.com. where you can also get in touch with us if you'd like to learn more. Until next time, stay informed, stay resilient, and keep shaping the future of cyber insurance.